and welcome back to Sprinkles of SEL with U2L, a podcast on social and emotional learning, wellness, neuroscience, and healthy habits for educators and anyone in the education space. I'm Namratha.
And I'm Claire.
And we're part of the SEL team here at United to Learn. So today's Sprinkle of SEL is about the power of relationships.
All right, so let's start off today's episode by asking ourselves one simple question. What's the secret to lifelong happiness?
Wow, I thought you were gonna go for a harder one, Claire.
So as we think about that, we might think, is it fame? Is it money? What do you think, Namratha?
Well, I'm sure they contribute to some extent, but I think when we're talking about lifelong happiness, I think it probably goes back to a lot of just maybe having gratitude, being content in our life, being surrounded by people we love and trust, something along those lines.
I agree with that. I think those are great answers. And I think another word that comes to mind, if I'm thinking one word answers, would be love. So I think I'm kind of thinking along the same lines as you. So along those same lines, one of the world's longest studies on adult development conducted by Harvard has been following the lives of the same group of participants for over 85 years now. And they've determined that the most significant indicator of lifetime happiness is not what we might think of cholesterol or financial success, but it's the satisfaction that they receive from their close relationships. So the study found that people that were the happiest at age 50 also turned out to be the healthiest of their age groups at age 80.
Oh, wow, okay.
So even further down the line. Mm-hmm. And furthermore, they determined that close, healthy relationships not only protect our bodies, but also our brains for a longer period than those without those healthy, sustaining relationships. So to answer our question, what makes a good life? Well, relationships. We are social creatures, and we have to surround ourselves with people in order to thrive.
Wow. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that's such an important point. It's the satisfaction they received from their close relationships. And so I think that's a really great, also, I want to say, like, just research coming out of Harvard to really be able to demonstrate that impact. But I want us to also think about this maybe in a different light, which is, what does it look like when we don't have those relationships to fall back on, right? So we're going to play a really quick game, Claire, of two truths and a lie. And listeners, please play along with us. So I'm going to share the following three statements. And you have to think, and Claire, tell me which statement that you think is a lie.
Okay, perfect.
You ready?
Yes, this is a classic icebreaker game, so I'm a pro at this point.
Oh, okay. All right. All right, so one. Being lonely and isolated are two times as harmful to our physical and mental health compared to obesity. Okay, so that's statement number one. Statement number two. A lack of social connection heightens our health risks as much as smoking 15 cigarettes a day or having an alcohol use disorder.
Oh my gosh. Okay. That's staggering.
Yes, that's statement number two. Statement number three. 20% of U.S. adults feel socially isolated and that their relationships weren't meaningful enough. Statement number three. What do we think? What's the lie?
Well, I think all of those statements, while sounding pretty staggering, as I said, also really relate to kind of the point we're trying to drive home in this episode. So I'm actually going to guess that all three are true, and you're throwing me a curveball. Am I right?
Okay, wait, that's actually a really valid guess. But no tricks here. There's actually a lie. Shall I tell you?
Share with me what the lie
is. Okay, yeah, no, there is actually a lie. And it is statement number three, 20% of U.S. adults feeling socially isolated and that their relationships weren't meaningful enough. Now, the lie is not that this isn't the case. The lie is that it's actually a higher number than this, which is alarming.
It is.
So let me dive into this. Research shows that our rates of loneliness have actually doubled in the past 50 years alone. With one particular study from Cigna, a health insurance agency, surveying 20,000 individuals, they determined that 40% of U.S. adults felt socially isolated and that their relationships were not meaningful enough.
Wow, yeah. That's quite a big number.
That is a giant number. That's much more than it should be at any point, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And going back through some of those points that we shared earlier on the negative effects of loneliness, another 2019 study was analyzing data from more than 580,000 adults. That also showed that social isolation was the key factor in increasing the risk of premature death from every cause for every race. So loneliness kills. But kind of what we were talking about before, relationships might be our protective factor here. They might be what we need to be able to live a long and healthy life, right?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And I also thought, you know, the pandemic probably really exacerbated those effects of loneliness and isolation as well. So I don't even know what a study would look like today that would be done, but I'm sure the numbers might even be even higher, which is very concerning.
Yeah,
but let's exactly. And let's talk about the definition of loneliness. So according to the American Psychological Association, loneliness is defined by people's levels of satisfaction with their connectedness or their perceived social isolation. So that means that we can feel lonely even when we're surrounded by people, but it's the deep connections and relationships that we forge with people that matter the most. So even when we feel connected to someone, we're happier, we're healthier, we gain better satisfaction out of life, and we can recover from stress, anxiety, and depression much faster. So I can certainly relate to this through my own personal experience. And whenever I'm feeling down or not in the best mood, and even when I don't feel like interacting with my friends or my family, I always feel a ton better whenever I actually have a conversation, whether that's a lighthearted conversation about something silly like the latest reality TV shows, or maybe a deeper conversation kind of addressing how I'm feeling.
Yeah. I'm like reflecting in my own relationships as well. And I have to agree. I feel like regardless of how light or deep those conversations are, it really goes back to how meaningful this person is to me and how strong that bond is with that person. And I will say, like, going back to that earlier point that Harvard's saying, right, it is that satisfaction that we are receiving out of this relationship. So if that relationship, if you're walking away from like an interaction with somebody, you're not feeling great, you know, we have to ask ourselves, why is that, right? Why am I feeling anything less than just, you know, satisfaction, contentment, and joy when we are around that person?
Right. And I agree with that. And I think it's also important to consider that oftentimes those lighthearted or deep conversations, whichever one you might have when you're feeling down with a loved one, most of those positive feelings come whenever that relationship is a healthy one.
Mm-hmm.
So we want healthy and meaningful relationships in our lives in order to foster this social connectedness that we discussed earlier. But what does that look like? So let's dive into what a healthy relationship looks like. So while our individual definitions of this may vary, the core of what makes a relationship healthy is respect, trust, safety, acceptance, freedom of choice, positive communication and conflict management, and fun.
Oh, I love that. Fun.
And also, just to highlight, safety is a really key part of this. If I'm not feeling safe in a relationship, I won't be able to develop any of these other aforementioned characteristics like positive communication or fun. And those are really important. So research done by researchers at UNC Greensboro defines a safe relationship as one that's free from all forms of abuse, neglect, and any other threats to one or more person's physical or emotional safety, well-being, and development. So I think it's important to consider that while healthy relationships have these positive aspects to them, they also really must be safe in order to have that foundation.
Yeah, and I feel like for me, you know, I read this in an article just years back, and I can't remember even the name, but I just remember like this point really hitting home of a healthy relationship. In that article, they were talking about it being determined by two main characteristics, which was trust and respect. And so ever since I read that, I was thinking about that, where one, do I trust this person? And then if I do trust this person, great. Do I have respect for them? And for me, it builds up, right? And I can't have respect for someone, or I can't feel like you said, like I can't have great communication or acceptance or like any of those other characteristics if I don't have the trust. And that is what you have to establish first. And that is what's going to make people feel safe and secure in that relationship.
Exactly.
So I think these are really great characteristics that we should definitely strive towards, right? Just to build up a healthy, healthy relationship with anybody. But is a healthy relationship then a perfect one, right? No, it doesn't need to be that like you're not arguing or anything at the time. I think those things are completely normal and natural and expected. And I think it's important to note that healthy relationships still can and should face challenges and conflict. But these relationships then are different in the way that you handle these conflict, right? So we want to be able to practice that respect. We want to be able to practice that acceptance and that positive communication and love, like you were sharing earlier, Claire.
Right. I think that's actually a really good point. And it goes back to what we were saying last episode when we were talking about it's not what you say, it's how you say it.
Yes, and absolutely.
Right. And in this situation, it's not what you encounter, it's how you encounter it and how you move through the conflict or the tension or whatever situation you might be dealing with that defines a healthy relationship.
Yeah, great point. That's a great point. So we've really, I think, established for ourselves, like we want healthy relationships. We know they're important. And let's take it back to our schools, right, for a second. Why are healthy relationships important to have in our schools? Claire, awesome. Take it away.
All right. So I'm going to lead just a really short exercise where we're going to need to do some deep critical thinking about our own lives, okay? So let's just take a minute to reflect on the healthy relationships we have in our own lives. So first, I just want you to take a deep breath. Now think of the top five people in your life that make up your support system. Those might be people that you know you can turn to for anything, you can talk to about anything. They're always going to have your back. And your relationship with them embodies qualities of a healthy relationship, as we just discussed, especially trust, respect, and safety. So think of those five people in your life for a moment. Namrath and I are also thinking.
Mm-hmm. Very deeply.
Okay, now that you might have those five people in your mind, how many of these relationships exist within the workplace? So I think that's a really important question to ask ourselves, especially as we'll get into that we spend a lot of time with these people. Mm-hmm. I hope we're going to have at least one of those people at the place that we work that we can go to for anything that we trust and that constitutes a healthy relationship.
Yeah. And I think as we are thinking about this for ourselves, I'm going to pose a question to us as well. And Claire, I'm going to ask you this. Especially for our educators, how many hours per week do you think our educators spend working on average?
Well, I know our educators are really hardworking, so I'm going to guess it's going to be a fairly high number, but I'm going to go with maybe 50 hours a week.
Okay. And I think it's funny that you say 50 because I think we both know that 40 is supposed to be, it's like the expected amount in our society. But I know you're saying 50 because like you said, our educators are expected to do so much and we're so aware of that.
Yeah, they have so much to do outside of their just written job responsibilities that the time doesn't account for.
Exactly. Exactly. So I'm actually going to share new research has come out showing that educators report spending 53 hours in their week working. So you were very, very close, Claire. And this is actually 7 hours more than the average working adult reports working. So not only is everyone just hardworking, our educators are going above and beyond and spending way more time than is expected or should be required.
Right. I hoped I was going on the higher side, but it's unfortunate that it actually ended up being more than I said.
Yeah. And it's also unfortunate that is just it is above that 40 number at all. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think we have to think about this for ourselves. If we are spending 8 hours or more at work, shouldn't we have at least one person in the building that we know we can turn to? Going back to your point earlier, and as we reflect on these five people that come to mind, if there is somebody on that list that is from your workplace, that is wonderful, that is beautiful. And I wonder if there is some way that you can replicate that. Is there somebody else that maybe you can build up that another additional relationship to? And if there isn't that person, I'm really encouraging you to hopefully you're in a good place that you can build up that connection.
Yeah. And I think it's also important, like you said, Namratha, if you're lucky enough to have one of those relationships in your workplace, I think it could be important to reflect on how you got to that place with that person.
Yes.
And like you said, replicate that in other relationships in the workplace. Mm-hmm. Keeping in mind the aspects that we mentioned earlier, like trust, respect, safety, positive communication, conflict management, all of those things in order to build a stronger community in our schools.
Yeah, I was going to say replicate doesn't mean don't talk, like talk about the same things or whatever. It means, yes, absolutely practice the same qualities that you want in those relationships. And I think we have to think again now, 53 hours, right? Imagine spending close to 53 hours working in a building with other adults and then not feeling safe or close enough to any of them. I feel horrible for anybody who might be experiencing that or has experienced that. My heart goes out to you. And I think, you know, that is us as adults. We also have to think about our students. Imagine what our students then would feel spending 8 hours or more a day with us in the building and then not having a trusted relationship with an adult at all. That's so tough for them. And keeping in mind what we've learned earlier just now about the detrimental impact of social isolation, this is really concerning, right? Because like we've talked about, it's not just about, oh, we're surrounded by people, therefore I'm not isolated. Social isolation exists, especially and even when you have people around you. It's if you feel connected to those people is what matters more.
Right. That's right? A great point.
Yeah. So we have to make sure our students and our coworkers feel safe to connect, feel encouraged to turn to each other, especially when the going gets tough. And more importantly, as the adults in the building, we have to model these relationships for our students. I know we said this last episode as well when it came to compassionate communication, and this goes hand in hand with that, right? We want to practice compassionate communication to build up these relationships. You know, our students are never going to learn if they don't see us practicing what we preach. So as educators, we need to protect and support each other. No one wins if we stay isolated from each other.
Yeah, I think those are all really significant points to make. And I think I actually have personal experience with feeling isolated in a school. I spent the last year teaching English at a school in Spain. And since most of the teachers did not speak English and they were already a tight-knit community, I experienced many instances of loneliness, whether that was eating lunch or sitting at an assembly by myself. And I realized that as a younger and a newer teacher at that school, I didn't feel a sense of belonging to the school. And as a result, I did not really feel as much allegiance to the community and also dedication to making it a better place through my actions. And so as educators in our schools, no matter how long we've been there, I think it's really important to take time to forge new relationships in addition to the ones that might be existing and also improve those existing ones in order to make our school community the strongest it can be. And I also heard a powerful sentiment from a mom the other day. She said that she encourages her daughter that rather than have friendship circles, we have friendship horseshoes. So there is always room for new people to join and bond. So I really liked that.
I love that. That is so, so special. And thank you so much for sharing about your experience. Because I think one of the things you said at the very beginning, right? You're a newer teacher and a younger teacher, and it was also a completely different, you know, setting for you as well. But part of what you said was, you know, there was already a close-knit community. There was already a close-knit group of teachers. So it's hard to crack something like that, right? Especially when you're coming in as a newer face, somebody they may not, you know, be accustomed to working with. And kudos to you for just, you know, being amazing and hanging in there. I love that. That's a really powerful sentiment, honestly. Just have friendship horseshoes, not circles. Right?
I know. And I think that's something that I could definitely employ in my own life, to always be looking for areas where I can include others and making sure that, you know, the relationships and the groups that I am involved in, that there's always room for one more.
Yes.
So absolutely. I think that's something that we can definitely think about in our schools as well.
Beautiful.
So we know the importance of healthy relationships, as we've discussed, and also developing a strong sense of community in our schools. But how do we get there? So going back to the Harvard study that I shared at the beginning of the episode, we know that the satisfaction that we get from our relationships is key to enjoying life and also to being happy. So let's ask ourselves the following. First, are we satisfied with our relationships? So just take a moment to think about, are you satisfied with the relationships you have in your life? The second question I have for you to reflect on is, are we satisfied with the ones we have at work, especially? Kind of going back to what we said before, thinking about those five people you might trust, were any of them at work? Were any of the ones in your top 10 at work? Are you satisfied with the relationships you have at work? If not, consider what aspects of a healthy relationship you embody in your work relationships and what aspects could you improve upon. So what are you lacking in that list of positive traits that we listed before? I think it's really important to reflect on not only your relationships outside of work, but also inside work in order to cultivate as many of those sustaining healthy relationships as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. So a survey that the Pew Research Center did last year, actually, and they did this with about almost 6,000 working adults in the U.S., they surveyed all these people and they found that high satisfaction with your workplace relationships plays such a major role in our overall satisfaction with our jobs, especially when workers are reporting being highly dissatisfied with others' areas of this work. So that is to say, having close relationships in the workplace has positive implications for your employee retention, right? Your job satisfaction and your overall health and well-being, especially even outside of the office. So I think we've talked about a few things today, right? Mm-hmm. One, we know that social isolation is so prevalent. And this can occur even when we're surrounded by people, right? It's about the quality of the relationships that matter. Two, we know that what is key then is having deep and meaningful relationships to be able to protect ourselves away from this and be able to thrive in our lives. And then we have to want to build these relationships up in our workplace, in our schools. And we have to start with the interactions we have as the adults in a school building, especially, right? If we are not practicing this, our students will not practice this, and we're not safeguarding them, we're not protecting ourselves, no one wins, that is to say.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Now, we've talked about how important building strong relationships is, but the fact remains that building this can be a challenge sometimes. Sometimes circumstances and people don't always allow for the best positive workplace interactions, and that can be a major roadblock in developing these relationships. So join us, or Namratha and Lauren, next episode for the season 2 finale.
Yay!
As we address workplace conflict, the challenges that arise from this, and also how we can navigate them to create a positive work experience for everyone.
Okay, thank you, Claire. So before we close out, what are our commitments for this week?
All right. I think my commitment to myself this week that I haven't been very good about, which I know has been one for you in the past too, Namratha, is to make sure I'm getting quality sleep each night and also the quantity that I know I need. So I think that's something that I need to work on, make sure I'm giving my body and my mind the rest it needs.
Absolutely. Sleep is important. Mm-hmm. Mine is another, self-care just moment of just trying to stay hydrated. I was just having another conversation with a colleague in the office about just not even drinking enough water for myself. And so I want to be able to take care of myself in that way and just, build myself up for the week.
I think that is a great commitment to yourself. Yeah. So now, before we close out, let's do our mindful moment. So today, our mindful moment is a quote from Ram Dass that says, "We are all affecting the world every moment, whether we mean to or not. Our actions and states of mind matter because we are so deeply interconnected with one another." So I think that goes back to our theme today, that we're all connected and building connections is important, and the way we interact with others is important.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we cannot leave without saying our typical usual sign off, which is, educators, we see you. We are here for you. We love you. Please let us know, especially, and if there's anything that comes to mind that you want us to be able to talk about on this podcast, we want to be there to support you in our full capacity. Please email us at sel@unitedtolearn.org. there's a topic on your mind, if there's anything you'd like us to talk about or learn more about. And please don't forget to like and review this podcast on just whichever platform you're streaming from. We know you're entering a very busy season, testing season. So please stay safe out there. Please connect with each other, be there for each other, and we are here for you as well.
Absolutely.
So see you next time on Sprinkles of SEL.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.